I don't think there's anything that gives you more of a sense of perspective than looking up at the night sky. It really puts us in our place, and I think in the best way possible. Larry Mueller here. Good to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're going to talk about astronomy today. And whether you're ready for your first experience or you've been studying it for a whole lifetime, I think you're going to enjoy hearing from our guests today. Jim Lattice is a faculty associate in the astronomy department at UW-Madison and director of the UW Space Place, which is a really cool place. Jim, always great to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry.
And Tom Hall, optics specialist with Eagle Optics in Middleton. He's also been with us many times. Tom, great to have you back.
Morning, Larry. Always a pleasure.
Always great to have you both here. And there are lots of things going on, I think, in the sky right now. We're going to find out about them. You may have some questions. You're a stargazer. Who or what got you started, maybe? Or do you have questions about what's going on in the sky? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post a question, or maybe you got a cool photo, a night sky photo, at my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And as we move along today, and talking about interesting things in the sky right now, what's visible in the next month or so?
Well, the first thing I always think of these days is Saturn, which is prominent in the southern sky, about as prominent as it gets. Right now, you look in the south, look over, depends on exactly what time you're outside, but in the early evening hours, you look south, a little bit southwest, and it's really, unless the moon is out, it's the brightest object over there. High up in the sky, if you look higher up, you see the second brightest star in the sky, which is Arcturus. Mm-hmm. But a little bit lower down, there's two objects that are, I don't know, about the width of your fist apart. If you hold it at arm's length, maybe something like that. And of the two of them, the brighter one is Saturn, the one on the left. So if we're doing a star party or something like that, or stargazing down at Space Place, Saturn is what we're looking at these days, first of all. And then we move on to other seasonal things. There's also some planetary conjunctions, well, groupings, pairings, I guess is really what we call them, that are coming up. But they're both going to be sort of challenging things on July 21st. If you look over into the sunset, in fact, these days, if you look over into the sunset, you can see Venus. Uh-huh. If you're out there, within an hour after sunset, it's the brightest thing. Again, if the moon isn't out, it's the brightest thing over there in the west. You'll see Venus shining there. It goes down pretty fast, but it's going to be right next to the star Regulus in the constellation Leo. Venus is, of course, moving as it orbits the sun, so it creeps across the sky there. It's going to pair with the star Regulus on the evening of the 21st, and it'll be near it the day before and the day after if it's cloudy on the 21st. So we'll be looking over there. That's probably the kind of thing where a good pair of binoculars will help pick it out, because it'll be deep twilight at that point. And then the next morning, the very next morning, on the morning of the 22nd, in the early morning sky, now we're talking pretty early these days, right? So 5 a.m. or before, be able to see Jupiter and Mars really close together over in the eastern sky. So if you're looking for sort of unique groupings, I got a couple of those coming up pretty soon.
Very, very cool. And as Tom, as we look at those, what do we got for new optics, or optics that you like to use for?
Well, there's always, the two major manufacturers, Celestron and Meade, always seem to come out with something new every 2 months, just so they can put it in the magazines and advertise them. So there's self-guided equipment in the larger telescopes, and there's smaller telescopes that are very compact and fold down in a 6-inch reflector that I know Jim always likes to recommend. Get those small, simple mount reflectors. You can find those for $199. Our company, Eagle Optics and Vortex Optics, our hunting arm, we did just come out with a brand new 7x50 binocular that's individual focus on the eyepieces. That's always excellent for astronomy. You know, there's no moving parts exterior to the binocular other than just focusing them right at the eyepiece. Very wide field of view, very sharp and clear for astronomy.
Yeah, 7x50 is usually what we recommend for astronomical viewing.
And it's a poroprism design, so it doesn't have any of the odd optical aberrations you can get into with the real compact, slim, straight-through ones. That would be an excellent one for astronomy. That's a fairly nice binocular. It's in the upper $300 price range, but you can always find nice equipment that's even just an 8x40, a good birding binocular, 8x42. Those can be excellent for astronomy, and you can stay in under $100 pretty easy.
Well, and the best equipment is whatever you've got at hand at the moment.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily have to go buy something new to go out and, you know, take a look at these things. In fact, a lot of people get started with what they have at hand and then start to think about, you know, or they ask me, you know, how come this doesn't work quite? And I say, well, you got to think about maybe, you know, something else. But whatever you've got around is enough to get you interested in it. And then you begin to form some specific interests or targets that you want to get at. That's when you start looking at it more carefully at
these things. What your needs might be.
Yeah.
Well, we have Bruce from Holman online. By the way, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Bruce, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. I don't have a question, but I do have a suggestion. I'm the secretary of the La Crosse Area Astronomical Society, and I think for people who are just getting into the hobby of amateur astronomy and want information and advice so that they do buy appropriate equipment and maybe learn how to use it, finding a local group or an astronomy club, and there are many located around the state, is a great way to start out. Our club, actually, our monthly meeting is tonight at Cawley Hall, the physics building at UWL campus, in the basement by the planetarium, and we have monthly meetings, we have monthly observing sessions. Anybody and everybody is welcome, and they're a real friendly bunch of people with a lot of experience, a lot of equipment you can look at, try out, and ask questions. So I would suggest, you know, find a local group, a local club, and contact them. It could be very, very helpful.
Thanks for calling, Bruce. And I'm sure you guys, Jim Lattice, you agree with that 100%.
Oh yeah. Thanks. Bruce is exactly right. And it's great to hear from La Crosse. Here in Madison, we often work with the Madison Astronomical Society, the Milwaukee Astronomical Society, Iowa County astronomers, they're just in the immediate area here. I know there's a pretty active group up around Green Bay and in Door County. So yeah, that's a great suggestion.
Yeah, and thanks again for calling. Appreciate it, Bruce. And again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Washburn Observatory is one of the great places in Wisconsin to learn about astronomy. And I'm pretty sure there's some summer public observation opportunities there too.
Right. Yeah. I like to point out that we've been doing having open nights for the public for over 130 years now on a regular basis.
Wow.
And in the summer, the schedule is every Wednesday night, weather permitting. So June, July, and August. That's how we define summer in that case. June, July, and August. Every Wednesday night, weather permitting. And so but of course, it's a little bit later in the summertime.
Yeah.
Probably not much point in arriving there much before 9 o'clock. In fact, I don't think they'll even open until a bit after 9 o'clock. And that, I mentioned Saturn earlier. That's what I was thinking of. That's a wonderful, it's an old telescope, but optically, it's an excellent telescope. And looking at Saturn, for example, is something that it's ideal for. So making a point to go up there sometime this summer or in the early fall, when the schedule goes back to the traditional one of the first and third Wednesday nights of the month. But we've been doing that since 1881 when the observatory opened, first and third Wednesday nights of the month. So I occasionally bump into somebody who says, you know, I got a degree from the university, or I've lived here in Madison a long time. When's that observatory open? Well, it's been open many times since you've been here. First and third Wednesday nights, weather permitting, always, of course.
Oh man, somebody was asking me about Perseid meteor flowers, and is that supposed to be pretty good this year?
Yeah, looks like it's going to be a good year for that.
The moon is quite new. Just during the 12th and the 13th when it starts up. Mm-hmm. For that matter, speaking of your pairings, Jim, if I remember right, I ran across Saturn is going to be extremely close to the moon on the night of the 12th, just a degree or three off or something. Very, very close. Should be really interesting. And the moon's just going to be a crescent.
Of August 12th.
Just setting August 12th, yeah. First night of the Perseids. But it'll be quite dark anytime after 10 p.m. After the moon is set. Should be just about ideal conditions.
So what we usually recommend is, the most important thing is to find a dark location if you want to observe meteors. And that's why the moon messes things up almost, because there isn't any dark location if there's a full moon or something. So you look for a dark location. And if you don't have the moon to contend with, you want to think about, then where do I go to avoid urban lights? And it can even help just to find a place where you don't have any lights actually right in your eyes, in the shadow of a house or something. And then the next thing is to get comfortable. So lawn chairs are usually the best way to go for that. And then you can really look any time, although meteor activity picks up after midnight. And the what they call the radiant point of the meteor shower gets higher in the sky as the night progresses. So midnight to dawn in general is the time to be out there. But it doesn't happen all at once. So really, for many days on either side of the predicted peak, there should be lots of meteors. So even if it's cloudy on the predicted night of the peak, that's no reason to give up, because a few nights before, a few nights after, it should be
pretty
good.
Pretty a lot of fun. And I've been in northern Wisconsin, just sort of in the Ashley-Shawamigan National Forest and during a Perseid. And that was really a lot of fun because it was dark.
Yeah.
it was wonderful.
Once your eyes are adapted, most of the meteors are quite dim, and dim enough that if there's skylighting or your eyes aren't adapted to the dark, you won't see them. You'll see the brightest ones, but that's a small fraction of them. That's the tip of the iceberg. And so as your eyes get adapted in a dark sky, there can be a surprising number of them.
I hope to be in the Shawamigan right around the 10th, and I'm hoping there'll be some early ones. You know, it peaks during the 12th and the 13th, but actually just get out any time that week, and you might surprise yourself. So,
well, I'm looking forward to it. Donna,
it's worth a late night.
Yeah, Donna in Edgerton, thank you for calling. Hi. Donna, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Hi. I didn't hear my name. Yes. I just have a question, and thanks for taking this call.
Sure.
A question about solar flares. Lately, I've been told that there is an increased activity of very high solar flares, and I was just wondering if there was any imminent danger to the Earth with electromagnetic pulses and stuff.
All right.
Not danger. The sun is on in a period of higher activity, which we get periodically, very roughly every 11 years or so. And so we've seen these many times before, but this is the first time since the last maximum that we've had, say, this many sunspots and this much magnetic activity on the sun. And occasionally, what happens is the magnetic energy that's bundled up in these sunspots erupts and produces what's called what used to be called a flare. It's still a flare in the visual sense, but we now know that that's associated with something called a coronal mass ejection. So it's a blast of high energy particles that erupts away from the sun and travels outward through space. So if the Earth happens to be in the path of that coronal mass ejection, which happens from time to time, usually the only effect we have is the rather pleasant one that we get a nice northern lights and southern lights too, aurora borealis. We get a nice display. And so I sit around hoping for a good coronal mass ejection that will actually hit us so that we can get a nice northern lights display. They do a really strong one does pose some danger to, but mostly to things that are in space. So satellites, especially communication satellites that are way out from Earth, the geosynchronous ones that aren't as protected by Earth's magnetic field as the lower in ones, and then in theory any people in space, so astronauts in the International Space Station might have to take some measures to protect themselves from the radiation if there was a really strong one coming in. Historically, there have been events that had direct results on Earth. The most famous one is the so-called Carrington event from the 1850s, when sparks jumped in telegraph lines, there were really significant effects right on the Earth. And if we had something like that, then we would probably have some bad effects on some of our electronics, maybe even power grids. Although the power companies know about these things and have strategies for dealing with that kind of thing. But that's, like I said, the last one was in the 1850s. They're very rare. This Carrington class event is a very rare sort of thing. So there's no point in sitting around
worrying about it.
Yeah, because they, for the most part, it's really an enjoyable effect. We get northern lights, so
there you go.
There is a sunspot right now. It could produce some flares, but it's going to have to happen in the next couple of days. Otherwise, it's not aimed at Earth anymore.
Ah. Thanks, Donna. Thank you very much for calling. Jim Lattice, faculty associate in the astronomy department at UW-Madison. He also directs the UW Space Place. And Tom Hall, our other guest today, optics specialist with Eagle Optics in Middleton. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about what's going on in space, or maybe have a question about astronomy equipment or optics of any kind, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you for sure. And John in Columbus up next. John, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if your guest could recommend a good site for buying and selling used equipment, if there's something out there that is catering to that type of items, telescopes, mounts, things like that.
You're looking to buy them? You're looking to buy them more, you think,
well,
or to sell them?
I actually have some to sell, but I was just wondering if there's a place that you'd recommend. I don't know if Craigslist is the best place or if there's actually...
I hesitate to recommend Craigslist. It's a little specialized for that. I would almost take Bruce's suggestion from earlier and your local resources, you know, get down to your most local astronomy club. And as we were mentioning here in Wisconsin, you can usually only travel 60 miles tops and you'd probably find one. Madison area has the Madison Astronomical Society, of course. And you might find an adult who's looking for, you know, equipment for a kid or that sort of thing. eBay has kind of taken over for a lot of some of the former listings that people had, but there are some resources that are kind of specific that you find in Sky and Telescope or Astronomy magazine that seems to be a, you know, a marketplace. There's one called Cloudy Nights that Jim has just reminded me with a note. Astronomy magazine, published right here in Wisconsin, by the way, Kalmbach Publishing, they do have resources like that kind of listed in the back. People looking to buy and sell, they'll just buy a little, you know, like we used to buy newspaper ads, they'll buy ads in the back of the magazine for that.
Perfect, perfect. So Sky and Telescope, Astronomy Magazine, those are both periodicals. Cloudy Nights, is that a website or is that a periodical?
Yeah, it's a website. So if you, it's probably cloudynights.com or something, but if you just Google for it, I think you'll find it. And that's a pretty good site. I usually go to it for reviews of equipment, but they buy and sell stuff there too.
There you go.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, John. We'll take some more calls at 1-800-642-1234. And just to let you know, stay tuned, because at 11:45 today we'll be talking about camping in Wisconsin. That's a time when a lot of people sit around in the evening and look at the night sky. It's a fun thing to do, and we'll be talking about that coming up at around 11:45. Today, Kelly in Clintonville has a question. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So, yeah, July 4th, we were sitting out outside by the fire, and it was so early in the evening, but we saw a huge meteor went through and the whole big, long, orange tail.
Cool.
And we were wondering if the meteor had a name, or is this one that I didn't hear if anything striking the Earth, but... it was really interesting, and I'm just wondering if it had a name.
So it was July 4th you saw it?
Yeah.
I guess we're all wondering if it could have been fireworks.
No, it was way
definitely not fireworks. Yeah. Okay.
No, it was a firework.
Those things, unless they're... Well, frankly, they're pretty common. If you spend much time outside under the sky, you'll see those pretty frequently. So they tend not to be cataloged or studied really very closely unless there's something that draws attention to them, like either a lot of people see them, or a piece of it hits the ground somewhere where it's found, or something along that line. But seeing a bright meteor like that, which is commonly called a fireball, if it's really bright and leaves a trail like that. Those sorts of things, you're just count yourself lucky to have seen a good one there. But I don't know of any notice of that particular one. When there is one that where there's a lot of interest, you might remember back in February that one that, that actually struck that Russian city, then people will set out to gather up data on it. You know, if you happen to have taken a if you have at least two or three photos of a meteor like that of a trail, then they can begin to do you can begin to do a little trigonometry on it and figure out how fast it was going and where it was and things like that. But just one visual sighting of it like that, usually we just say congratulations.
Yeah. Brian in Dorchester. Hello.
Hi. All right, Dorchester.
Yes.
About a month ago, well, it was Memorial Day. Around that time, there was a grouping of three planets in the west after sunset. And one was Jupiter, the other Venus, but I couldn't make out the third one.
Yeah, I think the other one was Mercury.
Mercury. Oh, okay.
Cool. If I remember correctly, yeah.
All right. I was kind of suspecting that. But
so did you see it yourself?
Yeah. And for several nights. And then they changed pattern, you know. First it was an L shape, and then later, succeeding nights, then it went into a triangle shape. And then after a couple of weeks, then it was just Jupiter.
Right. Yeah, well, you're lucky to have caught Mercury. Not a lot of people ever see Mercury because it's it appears fleetingly for a week or so at a time, either and always right after sunset or right before dawn, so not at a... not when it's dark, and you have to usually go to some trouble to see Mercury. So, having seen Mercury, you're welcome to the Mercury Club. There's not, I don't know what we are. Are we one in a thousand? I don't know how many.
It was kind of a unique event that there was three together in a pretty close grouping, and I didn't hear anything on the weather report or nothing. Mm. Nobody seemed to know.
But it was written up on the astronomy websites. In fact, Tom mentioned Astronomy Magazine. They have a really nice website, which I believe is just astronomy.com, probably. I don't know how they got that one.
And a monthly centerpiece in the magazine that will show you planet positions and which oppositions are coming up and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so it was written up in places like that. But that's a good one. For general astronomy information, what's going on the sky, that's a perfectly good place to start, astronomy.com, which is the astronomy magazine site.
There you go.
Member of the Planetary Society, but I guess I didn't catch that in their publication.
All right. Thanks, Brian. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Don in Madison, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling just to share that there's a really great spot to watch the Perseids. And that is from the deck of the Badger Ferry or one of the other boats that crosses the lake at late at night in the summer. It's spectacular because there's no urban lights out there in the middle of Lake Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
And you just lay on the deck. And I personally am not traveling on the Badger Ferry until they convert from coal over to a cleaner fuel. But after that, it's a wonderful place.
Huh. I never thought of that. So do they do a night crossing every night, or how often does that happen?
Yeah, at least back in the 90s, I was traveling from where I lived in the Traverse City area back here to family in the Madison area, and regularly I would schedule my August trip to be during the Perseid showers, and they had an 11 o'clock departure with a midnight arrival here in Wisconsin, something like that.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Wonderful idea. Thanks, Don. And it'd be calm, and you lay on the deck. That's maybe you have a little glass of wine or something with you. There you go.
I think you got a plan there.
Gene and Mercer. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I was just calling in because that woman spoke of you called it a fireball on the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I saw that. We were... it was probably 10:30, 11 at night. We were on our way home from the local fireworks in our boat, and all of a sudden there's this green thing coming down out of the sky.
Hmm.
Oh, excellent.
And where were you?
Mercer.
Oh, at Mercer. Oh, you were at Mercer. Okay. Very cool. Did you get a photo?
No, I didn't have the camera along.
Yeah, that's one of them. We never have the camera when we need it. Although, we're, nowadays with the phones... you know,
we didn't have a phone.
Well, you know that event in that's really great. Yeah, again, I'm sincere about saying congratulations, because those are a fun sight to see those fireballs go by. That Russian event back in February, they've gotten a tremendous amount of video material on those things because so many Russians have these dash cams on their cars that are constantly recording what's going on around them, and they were able to collect a huge number of tracks of from known locations of this of these trails.
Very cool. Thank you, Gene. Appreciate it very much. You can join in too. Maybe you saw that fireball, or maybe you have another question about what's going on in the sky. Maybe you have a question about binoculars or telescopes. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Tracy in Laval wonders how a planet can be brighter than a star. Guys were saying that Saturn is the brightest thing in the sky right now.
Well, so the I guess the answer to that is that they're closer, and so they it's just a question of how much light, you know, reaches the eye from the object. And so stars tend to be really far away, aside from the sun, and the planets are nearby. So it's regularly the case that Venus is brighter. In fact, I think right now Venus is brighter than any star in the sky, again, leaving the sun aside. And that happens on a pretty regular basis. Venus is not particularly large, but it is close to the sun and it's close to us. And so it reflects a lot of sunlight our way, and it's very bright in our sky. Jupiter can be brighter than Sirius, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure about Saturn. Saturn probably reaches a maximum right around the brightness of the brightest star in the sky, which is Sirius in the winter sky. So it's not uncommon for these planets to be brighter than even very bright stars.
What about Comet Ison? We're hearing about Comet Ison.
Yeah, yeah. So that comet is on its way in towards the sun right now. It was discovered, when was that? Was that last year? It must have been last year. It's one of these comets that's named after not an astronomer or even a couple of astronomers, but after the organization that operates the telescopes that discovered it. That's the ISON part. That comet is going to come in closest to the sun. It's going to reach perihelion on November 28th. The orbit of it is well known. It's going to be on its way in. It's going to be over in the evening sky as it approaches. So after the sun sets, it'll be up for just a little while. And there have been a range of predictions on this comet. And it's very hard, it's very dicey to make predictions of comets because they're extremely erratic, and their brightness. So we were talking about the brightness of objects. Their brightness depends on just how it develops a cloud of gas and dust around it. They're often called dirty snowballs, which is a pretty good description. As they warm up, they produce clouds of gas and dust and particles really around them. And the size and density of that cloud around it will determine how bright it looks to us in the sky. And then they develop a tail as well, and the size of the tail depends on similar sorts of things. So all these are footnotes to, is this going to be a bright comet or not? The models suggest that this could be a very bright comet, especially early next year. It's going to pass perihelion on the 28th of November. Then it'll be in the morning sky. And if it's been as active as the models predict, it could be an extremely bright comet. It'll be something that we'll all see.
Very cool.
So, it's something to keep in mind, and we'll have presumably better predictions of it as they continue to monitor how its brightness changes as it approaches the sun and see whether it continues to follow the models that suggest it's going to be really bright. Something to watch for when we come watch the news in as we come into November, there'll be a lot more about it if it's really going to be a good bright comet.
Al in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is this. I'm interested in what would be a good, reasonable priced beginner telescope just for casual observation, easily transportable. Since I live in Madison, I'd have to get out of town a little ways to avoid the light clutter.
Yeah.
And as far as focal length, that kind of thing, what would be, I don't need a brand name, but what would be a good starting point?
Okay. Tom Hall, let's turn to you first.
Did you have a price range that you were hoping to stick within, or any other?
I have no idea what they run initially.
Sure.
Let's say under $500.
You can actually start out very well between $200 and $500. Both Jim and I have always liked the very simple reflecting telescopes. Mm-hmm. You can buy, and they're on alt-azimuth mounts. They may call that a Dobsonian mount when you're looking through the literature. And the latest issue of, and I'm not going to remember if it was Astronomy or Sky and Telescope, there was a brand new manufacturer out who was just kind of an independent organization that made a very collapsible 6-inch reflector, which is a good sized mirror to start with, especially if you can get in under $500. These were $199.
Oh, wow.
And it featured a collapsible tube. So the tube would collapse down right onto the base. That was this simple Dobsonian alt-azimuth base. The advantage to those is that type of base is very steady. You can buy a lot of these telescopes that have a tripod that advertises that it goes up to, 4 feet or 5 feet in height, but the legs on those are very spindly.
Right.
And we always try to recommend that you get as steady a base as you can. When you go outside of Madison, find a nice picnic table for an alt-azimuth mount like this, the Dobsonian mounts, and you'll find they're quite steady. They hold the image much better than you normally can. The price on it was $199, and unfortunately the name escapes me. But like I say, you can just pick up an issue of Sky and Telescope magazine, and quite frankly, both Meade Instruments and Celestron, the name brand ones, as you had said, do feature some fairly nice, inexpensive Dobsonians, because they realize that is the market for them on some of these. And then this one was featured in a sidebar article. Orion Telescopes out of California, really clearinghouses a lot of these too, and they'll have quite a few, including their own line, and that's OrionTelescopes.com. That would also be a great place to start. But you should find a few of those, so long as you stick with that kind of criteria. Look for a very stable mount. Look for some of those Dobsonian or alt-azimuth type reflecting mounts. You'd be surprised at what those can do. Those can get a lot of good deep sky objects, not just the planets, which are quite bright normally. And that's the problem with the small refractors or the ones on the spindly mounts. You try to look at the planets with those, and they're so shaky at the high magnifications you try to get the planets magnified up to that it's not a very rich experience. But boy, those reflectors can really get you started well and keep you interested.
Yeah.
Okay, one more quick question. Would you be concerned about buying a used telescope in this this size range?
Oh, no, not at all.
Not at all.
You know, not much goes bad on a telescope.
As long as you can get a look at it, you have to make sure all the parts are there. I occasionally see used telescopes where somebody's forgotten what drawer they put the eyepieces in, and then you can't use it without an eyepiece. So make sure that the pieces you need are there, but it's been kept clean. But other than that, Tom's right. They last forever.
There you go, Al.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. Larry, great show as always.
Oh, thanks, Al. Appreciate it. And Randy and Kadat, hello.
Hello. I was wondering if your guest could talk about the Hobb Observatory just outside of Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Do you guys know the Hobb Observatory?
I've heard of it, but I can't tell you much about it. Are you wondering whether they have observing nights or something?
Well, I know that they have it open to the public, but I was hoping like more technical information on the telescope itself, if you would know.
Yeah. I'd have to send you to them for that. I'm afraid I don't know the details.
I've never been up through that one, no.
Well, can't help you out there, Randy. I'm sorry, but we might be able to find something and post it up on my Facebook page. I'm sure have a page.
Yeah, now that he's asked the question, I'm going to have to go look. But
I'm sure there's a page for the Hobb Observatory. We'll post it up on our Facebook page. And just we'll get a couple minutes left here, but major research event going on, Jim.
Right. This is big news here around the university, which is that UW-Madison is now a has joined a major research project, which is called the has kind of a long name, the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, the SDSS, which has actually been around for a few years. But there's a it uses a remarkable research instrument out in New Mexico, and the earlier phases of this project have created a huge database, really a huge. It's a survey. Yeah. Of a huge fraction of the sky, about a quarter of the sky, and millions of objects at a scale that's never been done before. And this new phase, which UW-Madison is now a partner in, is going to do detailed studies of, among other things, galaxies, detailed studies of galaxies, again, on a scale, just a numerical scale that nobody's ever approached, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of galaxies, seeing the details of each one and having those available. No one person will look at all of those, but they'll be available in a database, which ultimately would be available to the public, as the earlier results of the Sloan survey are all available to the public even now. So that's going to be, for the next 6 or 7 years, that's going to be a major scientific activity for the astronomers here, a major opportunity for the University of Wisconsin.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, and something we'll, I'm sure, be talking about in the future.
No doubt.
Well, guys, it's always a pleasure. I thank you so much. And we've got, I think I've got Eagle Optics up on my Facebook page, a link there. We've got a link to the UW Space Place. Lots going on at both places, and take a look. And thanks again to both of you, Jim and Tom. Appreciate
thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Tom Hall of Eagle Optics and Jim Lattice of the UW Space Place, our guest. And they'll be back, and we will do that again with them. It's getting away from urban areas. We talked about that quite a bit. It's a, you know, it's a way to see what's up in the night skies better. And, you know, when I went camping, I always do that. It's a perfect time to do that. Coming up next, we'll visit with folks from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources about how to enjoy camping in Wisconsin. So I hope you'll stay with us, and maybe you've got some camping stories of your own to share. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.